Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson. We got week 7 in the books. We got the first BCS standings out, and you are listening to the Fish and Chips Week 7 Rewind. So, joining me as he always does is Mr. Brian Fisher. And before we get into football, Brian, I got to ask you, how are you feeling about the Yankees and this ALCS, how it's gotten off to a not a great start for the boys in pinstripes?
No, I think it's it was kind of what we expected. Derek Jeter goes out. A-Rod is terrible. And, you know, Robbie Cano, I mean, he's 0 for 30 or something like that in the last couple of at-bats. It's not been a fun postseason of baseball for me, but has been exciting, I will say. I mean, I watch a ton of baseball. It's probably the one sport, even more so than the NBA, that I watch outside of college football and maybe even college basketball. It's baseball, especially during the summer months, and all teams, all sizes. And, you know, I'm a bit surprised that Detroit is this good right now, but I think that, you know, we'll see how they go going forward. But they ran into a team that they can easily beat in the Yankees. You know, they were kind of lucky to get out of that division series against Baltimore early on. And I'm excited to really watch the NLCS. I think that could be a really good series between St. Louis and in San Francisco. But I digress. I digress into our baseball topics. But very interesting couple of days with the Yankees. Certainly they're getting all the press, but should be a good postseason in baseball for sure.
And, you know, these games we're recording right now, Sunday night, and the first BCS standings have been released. The computers have been all tabulated, and it turns out, no shock with Alabama right there at number one, but it is the Florida Gators who check in at number two on the BCS standings, and then Oregon at number three. My first question to you, Brian, is how much do these first ones matter? Because I would argue that while this is nice to check in and it's great for us to talk about, there's still so much football left to be played, particularly when you look at the SEC and all these teams. This is just sort of like our starting point, right?
Yeah, I mean, these initial rankings really do not mean anything at all. And I think if you look back over the BCS standings, you know, there's really only been two teams that have come out number one and won the BCS title. So it's interesting. It's nice to look at and argue about. But, you know, I think we do look at this point in the season, there are some truths. And that's if Alabama wins out, they're going to be in the national title game. I don't think that's revolutionary. That doesn't have anything to do with these BCS standings. Their ranking will only get stronger as the season progresses, as they play LSU, as they play in the SEC championship game. You know, you look at Florida at number two, surprising to some, certainly, you know, being behind Oregon in both of the human polls. But when you look at their resume, the wins that they have, you know, two on the road in the SEC against some solid teams in Texas A&M and Tennessee and tough places to play. You know, and then the big one this week against South Carolina, going to be interesting to see how they handle that. But no really huge shock when I look at the rankings. The one thing that I thought was notable, no Big Ten teams, first of all, you know, that was not terribly surprising, I guess, but still interesting to see. And then, you know, the Big East gets three teams in the top 25. The ACC really taking a hit. I think that's the one thing that I saw. When you look at Florida State all the way down at number 14, behind West Virginia, a lot of people talk about that loss to NC State knocking them out of the title game. You know, that's why. You know, that's why it would have been tough, even had they won out, for them to get to Miami for the championship game. They're only ranked in two computers. Their highest ranking of those two is number 23. So that gives you an idea of the strength of the ACC right now. And, you know, let's face it, these standings don't really matter until we get down to crunch time.
Yeah, exactly. Because you look at these teams, particularly in the top five, in Alabama, Florida, Oregon, Kansas State, Notre Dame, and then even further down, LSU, South Carolina, Oregon State at 8, Oklahoma at 9, USC at 10. Just in those top 10 teams, we've got at least, off the top of my head, what, like 4 to 5 games of those top 10 teams playing each other? I mean, we will see this all play out. And I will say that a moment like this is when I will stop and, you know, somewhat agree with the people that promote the college football regular season as one of the reasons why it's so special. You know, looking at this and seeing how the best teams in college football are about to play each other on regular season Saturdays gives a little bit of credence to that argument.
I mean, look, you know, it is a long season. We're only at the halfway point. Oregon still has to play USC. USC still has to play Notre Dame and Oregon. Oregon State still has to play Oregon. Notre Dame has to play Oklahoma and USC. You know, Florida has to play South Carolina and possibly Alabama in the championship game. So, I mean, there are a lot of big games coming up. You know, I think the most interesting thing I think you can take about it is maybe looking at the Big East and seeing where they're at as a league with those three undefeated teams. Maybe they're a team that could surprise people. I really think Rutgers is a lot better than some people are giving them credit for. And you know, you wonder maybe if they run the table, how do they fit in the mix? You know, certainly they would be behind an Oregon or a Florida or whatnot, but just still interesting to see how they stack up right now. And then and then the big thing is BCS Busters. I mean, we got to keep an eye on that as well. You know, right now it's really down to a two-team race between Boise State and Ohio, and they have to finish in the top 16 and ahead of that Big Ten champ. That's certainly an interesting possibility for Boise State. I think they're the only team that could do that or finish in the top 12. But it's still plenty early. We're only at the halfway point, and a lot of college football left for us.
Yeah, Boise State quietly getting a very big win against Fresno State. In my mind, Mountain West, it's kind of Nevada, Boise State, Fresno State. And they got it thanks to a really, really strong performance from a young defense that seems to be maturing as the season goes on. They've really been actually strong all season, all the way back to that opener against Michigan State. A vintage day from DJ Harper and their freshman JG, also turning in a big performance. I think the Broncos are, they, as long as they don't trip along the way and Southwick, you know, as long as they don't ask Joe Southwick to do too much, he's normally okay at being able to take care of the ball and just having a running game that they can lean on. If they continue to show what they showed on Saturday, I could absolutely see them getting up in there above the Big Ten champ.
And the, you know, I mean, you look at that defense, especially, and the number of guys that they lost, and that's really for both sides of the ball, but especially on that defense and the way they've been able to rebuild. Yeah, the schedule hasn't been great. The schedule upcoming's very easily. I mean, it really does come down to that game at the end of the year at Nevada, which has kind of been a house of horrors over the year for the Broncos. But we'll see how they can handle it. Nevada's a very good team. They got the nation's top rusher. And I think if Nevada continues to run the table and that game at the end of the year could be very interesting in terms of BCS seedings and how everybody shakes up. So a long ways away, like I've been saying, but it is what makes the season fun. And hey, let's face it, I can't wait until we don't even have to talk about this BCS stuff in 2014. That's when it really gets interesting. And the talking points, I think, become more important for each team.
Right, because then you're not even though it is just two more teams, in the eyes of a selection committee, in the eyes of college football fans, it's just going to be easier. Because you even look at this group and you can sort of see, ways that different groups of teams, there are certainly tiers of teams in college football. I mean, when you turned in on CBSSports.com on Monday, when this will be posted, we all sort of got together and Brian talked about in 2014, there will be a selection committee, and the selection committee will get together and they will put out a selection committee rankings during the season to sort of give an idea of how the committee is viewing the different teams, especially as it sorts out to picking those top four. How did you rank your top three or five teams at the top for your selection committee ballot?
Well, I think number one, you got to go with Alabama. Having seen them up close, what Nick Saban has been able to do in terms of reloading on defense is impressive. That's a team that you have to be perfect to beat. And I think it was concerning when AJ McCarron got hurt and seeing how they reacted, but he went right back in there. The knee is supposed to be okay. They've got a great stable of running backs, a great offensive line. I mean, they are built to win a national title this year. They can handle, I think, just about whatever is thrown at them. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see if they have an off game. Can they make enough plays? They certainly got a big test coming up in Death Valley, a place that is hard to win. And so that's going to be their biggest test of the season, without a doubt. And we'll see how they handle it. I go, you know, Oregon after that. And you know, I think they're a team that has shown that they could be better on both sides of the ball than a lot of people think. You know, they had the issues of breaking in a quarterback. Marcus Mariota has said, you know, hey, I'm fine. I have great touch on my passes. They obviously have a great running game. They have electric playmakers like DeAnthony Thomas. I would imagine that it would be a pretty good matchup if those two ended up together. I think that would really be interesting and fun to see. But I think you can go from there in terms of you know, who you want to put where. But I think it's Notre Dame when you look at that number three spot. I know a lot of people want to have Oregon in there, but you know what the Irish have been able to do is just impressive. Yeah, they haven't been great on offense, and you know, we kind of understand that you do need to be balanced on both sides of the ball to get there. But I mean, they have three top 25 wins, which is more than anybody in the country, and they are just dominant on the defensive side of the ball. And we haven't seen them be tested in the secondary, but I think with what they've been able to do in the front seven, get guys experience in terms of playing time in that young secondary is huge. And then you're going to go, I would go Florida, Kansas State, LSU, South Carolina, Oklahoma, and then Oregon State and Florida State to round out my top 10. But, you know, I think still very early in the year and lots of football to be played.
Yeah, I've got Alabama and Oregon as my one and two, and I sort of turned the corner as we sat down. And Nick Saban said on TV tonight, he said the most predictable thing about college football is that it's unpredictable. And that's true. And that's why it almost makes me nervous how excited I'm getting at the idea of that Alabama-Oregon matchup that you're just speaking of. Because, my mid-season BCA, you know, just if you were to just ask me right now, and I don't have any great reason to tell you why I'm right or why I'm wrong, but I'm starting to feel like maybe Oregon over Alabama would be, that's my BCS title game pick right now. I just think that, you know, like you said, I think Oregon's defense is being slept on a little bit, and if they. I would see it playing out kind of. I mean, that Auburn Oregon game was that could have gone either way. That's a field goal and a Michael Dyer, you know, flip over away from maybe an Oregon win. And so maybe if there's a team that's going to strip it from the SEC, I could definitely see Oregon with all that Chip Kelly's been building over there in Eugene being the school to be able to strip it away and keep the SEC from getting title number seven.
And I think if there's maybe one team of the one loss teams that can get back in it, you know, you look at the two big ones that I think are Oklahoma and USC. USC is going to have to play Oregon twice. That's going to be a big boost for their rating. You know, they also have a strong schedule. I think to kind of close out the year, Arizona State's going to add to it because they're better than expected. They obviously played Notre Dame late in the year. Oklahoma also plays Notre Dame. They also have a strong schedule. They're going to play West Virginia. They're going to play TCU. They're going to play some pretty good Big 12 teams in what is probably the best league top to bottom in the country. So that's going to help. And I really think of that kind of troika, that those three teams are really – the ones to watch if you're looking for a one-loss team is how well do those do. I don't think at this point in the season we can say a one-loss SEC team will get back in the national title game and possibly get a rematch. I think that's out of the question at this point in the season.
Now, we've the BCS standings, and as we were talking about, all of these developments are, you know, certainly the news of the day, but if we were to step back to Saturday, which seems like it was ages ago, especially for my colleague, Mr. Fisher here, because Brian started his day at the Texas State Fair and finished it probably around 3:45 in at the Independence Bowl, knocking out Texas and Oklahoma, the Red River Shootout, then heading on to Shreveport to see Louisiana Tech and Texas A&M's just a thrill ride. You went from the fair to a roller coaster, and it just in general, is Johnny Manziel as impressive in person as he is on television? Because he's probably right up there with one of my like top five favorite players, like just not necessarily best, but favorite players to watch in college football right now.
Oh, this was the first time I had seen him in person, and I had obviously watched a couple of his games in terms of, you know, what he was able to do. But I'm impressed by how quick he is. I mean, he can just literally flip a switch and turn it on and get around the corner. And, he has a great, I think, hesitation in terms of knowing when to take off. I think he still is a better passer than a lot of people give him credit for. He can really sling it and get the ball out very quickly. And he's an exciting player, no doubt. You don't put up the numbers that he's putting up and not be a good player. And this is an A&M team that I think can give people problems. Now, you'll look at the comeback against La Tech in the second half where they really got lazy, I think, on offense. They weren't executing like they wanted to out of the half. But when they flipped the switch when they needed to, they go 99 yards on that one drive to really essentially ice the game, even though La Tech kind of came back and cut it to win within two. But, Johnny Manziel, he's great. The legend of Johnny football grows again once more. And, this is a very interesting team. I think when you look at the game coming up against LSU, it's going to be a tough test for that defense and going to be, I think when they get into the Alabama game, this might be the most interesting quarterback matchup that defense is going to face. Johnny Manziel is really what we expected Denard Robinson to be to this Alabama defense early on the season. He's a guy that doesn't mind taking off, and I think they will let him run a little bit more against Alabama. He's not just going to sit in the pocket and throw it. They got a very good offensive line, some good running backs. I noticed that they used the diamond formation a lot to get guys downhill with some misdirection, so I think that's going to be in play when they start the SEC play and get into the thick of things this next month. The defense is better than I thought. It's not great, but it's better than I thought, and I think this is a very solid Texas A&M team.
Yeah, no, absolutely going to be very fun, and I agree with you too. I'm not looking at I'm not looking at what the way that Louisiana Tech was able to come back as necessarily a knock on the Aggies as far as their ability to contend in the SEC.
Well, Tech's a good team. I think that's what escapes a lot of people. They started slow in the first half, but this is a very good La Tech team, and there's a reason we were talking about them as a BCS buster.
Right, exactly. So there's no the fact that Texas A&M jumped out to that big lead, and that it was going to happen eventually. I was watching that game, you know, sitting there talking to you throughout it, and I just figured in my head, I was like, you know what, it's not going to surprise me the Bulldogs get back in it. Colby Cameron and just that whole offense, so potent. And Quentin Patton just could not be guarded in the secondary. And thankfully, there's not a ton of game-changing receivers like Patton left on the Aggies schedule in SEC play.
Yeah, I mean, he's an NFL caliber guy. He was phenomenal. Almost came close to setting the or at least tying the record for FBS catches in an FBS game. He was phenomenal in the second half, made tough catches, was able to break away from guys, you know, really gave that Texas A&M secondary all they could handle. And this is a very good Louisiana Tech offense. They got a pretty good freshman running back in Dixon. Colby Cameron's a very solid quarterback. I think the defense is not great for sure, but I think anytime your offense can put up that amount of yards, that amount of points, you can do some things. And probably still the favorite in the WAC, and I don't think they're doing anything to slow down rumors that Sonny Dykes will be ending up at one of the big SEC jobs that opens up, because he's a very good coach. He was very passionate about his program and afterwards, and I think he's a guy on the rise, and this is a program on the rise. They're a very good team, and it was a phenomenal game. It was a long, long day on Saturday. It started at 7 a.m. and ended about 3 a.m., but it was a fun double dip, and I think the craziness of that A&M La Tech game certainly was a good nightcap.
Were you more impressed with Oklahoma or depressed with Texas's performance in the Red River Shootout?
I was definitely more impressed with Oklahoma. I knew, having seen Oklahoma and Texas before this year, kind of what they were about. And I think if you look back at that game against Kansas State, where Oklahoma had them, I mean, that if they don't turn the ball over twice, and they're in, you know, Blake Bell has the one, and then they had the other fumble. I mean, there's really like a 14-point swing in there, and that's what Bob Stoops mentioned in his press conference, that they really are, you know, closer than a lot of people think to that Kansas State team. I think the Wildcats are a really good team. I think Oklahoma, when they're executing like they did against Texas Tech, like they were against Texas, I mean, there's not many teams in the country that can beat them. They have a lot of weapons on offense. I think you look at the running back situation, they got guys in there. Roy Finch is a really good running back, and he doesn't get much playing time because there are a ton of other guys in there, and they like to rotate guys in and out. And the wide receiving core has come along. Landry Jones, probably the only thing that really does hold them back. He's still a very good quarterback. He made some really good throws against Texas. But every once in a while, you kind of have that facepalm moment with him, and where you're like, why did he throw that ball?
Yeah,
and that's the thing you got to live with. I mean, he's going to throw it 45 times a game and put up 300-plus yards and make some really good throws. But he's going to have a bonehead mistake every once in a while. And that's just how this team is. The defense, though, was probably the most impressive thing about Oklahoma the last 2 weeks, is the way they've been able to limit the offenses that were coming in very efficiently. They did it against Tech. They did it against Texas. They were really able to take guys out of their rhythm. And I think they did a great job of that. And, hats off to Mike Stoops. What he's been able to do with that unit has been phenomenal. And this is, I think, a team that is going to be Notre Dame's biggest challenger in 2 weeks, is because they match up so well. They do have a wide receiving core and a quarterback that can take advantage of that young secondary. They can run the ball like they did against Texas, and I think it's going to be a fun one up in Norman. But very good team, no doubt about it, and definitely am a little I guess disappointed in Texas. I really thought they had the talent this year to be a lot better, to be a 9-3, 10-2 type team, and certainly that's not going to be the case. Struggling on defense, and guys just weren't in the right positions. That was the thing that struck me. It's not a thing where you're looking at a missed tackle here and there, although that certainly was an issue, but guys are out of position, and that comes down to coaching, that comes down to execution. Guys aren't comfortable with the scheme, and the offense, I think, is just taking the step back week by week. And so, we'll see how the season goes. This is, both teams are kind of in the spot last year, and we'll see how they respond going forward.
I am very, very just sort of fascinated with how quickly, even myself, how my view of Texas and the Texas coaching staff and Brian Harsin in there as the offensive coordinator, Manny Diaz as the defensive coordinator, those spots under Mac Brown, you hold them in an esteem, like they are, that this is where the next crop of head coaches is going to be. You think about being the offensive or defensive coordinator under Mac at Texas, and the Harsin's offense has not really clicked in the last couple weeks, and maybe that is some of Oklahoma's defense. I still need to go back and watch a good amount of that. But then, there's so much talent on the defensive side of the ball. We came in boasting about how Texas's defense was going to be able to cause all this trouble, and they were going to run the ball and have lockdown D, and none of it's really working. And the overreacting fans, the lunatic fringe, they're going to of course start talking about Mac and the you know, lifetime contracts, and things will get awkward. You know, do you think this is just just stubbing the toe, or is this a failed experiment to try and change the way that the program was built? Or, you know, do we see a bounce back from the Longhorns in the coming weeks, or is the bad just going to get worse?
You know, I really don't know what to expect from Texas. They have the talent, and it's a tough blow, as we came to find out Sunday night, that Jackson Jeffcoat, the defensive end, is out for the season with a pectoral tear. But I think this is a team that still has plenty of talent. They are a tad young, and they're going to learn. But there's no doubt about it that there's something missing with this team. There's not the game changer that Texas has had when they've had success. You know, you look back to when they were winning 10 games and 11 games and 9 games, and it was like clockwork. They had a game changer, especially at the quarterback position. They had Vince Young, they had Colt McCoy, and I think outside of that, they just haven't had a guy that can turn things around for them. And I know we talked about it a little bit on a previous podcast with LSU and Tyrann Mathieu. You know, you kind of felt like they don't have that game breaker that can pick the team up, turn things around, get the momentum back on their side. And that's the one thing that Texas just doesn't have. And they haven't had it for a couple of years. And, you know, you can point to recruiting. You can point to the struggles at quarterback. And I think there's a host of things that you can look at and say, well, it's this, it's that. But the bottom line is they don't have a game breaker that can open things up, that can turn around the momentum. And that is surprising. I mean, they have the pick of the litter in terms of recruits. I think their recruiting is just fine. It's not necessarily an issue of that, of talent on the roster. It's really talent development, coaching, getting players to buy into the system. And, you know, I'm not sure that everything is peachy down in Austin there. I mean, you know, you hear Kenny Vaccaro, who's probably the locker room leader on the defensive side, you know, say Oklahoma's wide receivers are saying, hey, we're going to run it. And they kept running it down their throat. I mean, that's a punch of the gut, no matter how you look at it. And I'm really curious to see how Texas responds. They were in this exact same position last year, and, you know, they kind of waddled their way to an 8-5 record. Now, can they do that again? Can they be better than that? You know, who knows? But it's going to take some people pulling themselves up by the bootstrap, and it's going to take some concentration and some focus, and they're going to have to get back. I mean, this is Texas, and they're struggling, and there's no reason they should be.
All right, now we're gonna wrap up this Fish and Chips podcast like we do every week with a little bit of the Fish and Chips Week 7 honor roll. I'll go ahead and kick things off. First guy I'm going to pick on is Eric Reed, and he delivered sort of what we talked about as far as the game-changing play. You know, the LSU, the very prototypical LSU game-changing play, kind of looked like Ace Sanders slipped and Eric Reed stepped right up and picked off Connor Shaw. It was a huge play for LSU's defense, and even though the Gamecocks had a chance there, scoring a late touchdown, in my mind, that was what sort of turned the tides and gave the Bayou Bengals that very, very, very big win. And you know, when we said something was missing from LSU, just like we feel like it's missing from Texas, being able to run the ball, having Jeremy Hill come out, having Eric Reed make that play like that, it seems like a very LSU SEC win. And it's, in my mind, you know, kept them right there in that conversation, certainly to have a shot when the Crimson Tide come to town on November 3rd. Do you have anybody you want to throw on the honor roll next?
Well, I'll go with Johnny Manziel. I mean, what he was able to do, breaking his own SEC total yardage record in a span of 2 weeks. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah. And he was electric against Louisiana Tech. I knew he was going to put up some big numbers, but what he means to that offense is definitely a lot. He's more improved as a passer than I was expecting. I think he's got some good wide receivers, a good offensive line, so that certainly helps in his maturity. But you know, after the game, Kevin Sumlin was talking about you know, hey, he's only got 6 games under his belt, and I think that might be the most scariest, you know, the scariest thing about him is Yeah, he is so young. He doesn't have that experience, and yet he's still doing what he's doing. So very impressed with him and what he was able to do. And I'm definitely curious to see what he does against LSU. I mean, he's faced a good defense before in Florida. We've seen that unit step up and stonewall some teams, and I'm curious to see how he does against especially that front seven, which is probably one of the better ones in the country. I'm curious to see how he performs, but was phenomenal this week against Louisiana Tech, and no way you can keep him off of this award with what he just did.
Yeah, and I've got a feeling he will be a name that is collecting more accolades. I know I've got him on some midseason ballots that I'm turning in for CBSSports.com this week. I've got another one for you, Brian, and he's out your way. I'm going to pick a little Cody Vaz, Oregon State quarterback, filling in for Sean Mannion. He throws three touchdowns, 332 yards, and it was the kind of performance, you know, he hasn't played since 2010. Mannion goes down, and he just steps up. It's at BYU. BYU's got a very tough defense, and they had a blackout. The home crowd was going nuts. And he just came in and he was a gamer. I mean, he just came in and kind of balled. He stepped right in, delivered a couple great passes to Wheaton. And I think, I don't know if Vaz is going to be able to repeat that high level of performance against the entire Pac-12 slate, but just to the confidence that he must have just given his teammates and just kept them all playing, you know, at the level that they're going to need. I mean, we're sitting here talking about a team that's in the top 10 right now and competing for the Pac-12 North title with the Ducks. So to see him come out and do that, especially on the road at BYU, very, very impressed with Vaz's play and a good sign of what could be to come in Corvallis.
And I'm just going to say that everybody was picking BYU in that game as soon as they heard that Sean Mannion was out. I had faith in you, Vaz. I had faith in you. And I picked Oregon State and obviously was rewarded. So I'm just going to say that. Just going to put it out there.
Oh, yeah. No. I picked them. And I think that Oregon State, they've really sort of emerged. That's probably my feel-good sort of surprise story of the season. Especially, think about on the Pac-12 preview podcast when you and I were talking about it, and we were just almost like, oh, man, Mike Riley's so nice. We wish he'd catch some good breaks. Well, hello. Welcome to the 2012 season. Pretty good break for Mike Riley so far.
Absolutely, and couldn't happen to a better guy. Nice coach in college football for sure. They're proving that they can win as a team. I mean, it's not just the quarterback. The defense is a lot better. Scott Crichton, the defensive end, is a guy people might not know about, but is really good. Poyer, the corners, is very good. Marcus Wheaton's done some phenomenal things. He had that crazy play against BYU on the reverse. So, I mean, this is a very solid football team. And you look at the schedule, you know, I mean, they don't play USC. And, you know, I think that they have a chance to maybe go in with some huge stakes up there for that Civil War against Oregon.
Those are my two recommendations. You got one more to round out the honor roll?
I'll go. I'm going to ask the moderator here. Can I do a double?
Yes.
For out of one game?
Yes, you can certainly do a double.
Okay, I'm going to go with Texas Tech. And I'm going to go double with Art Kaufman, the defensive coordinator, who Texas Tech just hired, did a phenomenal job. Only limited West Virginia to only 14 points and really seven through most of the game. I mean, that was a phenomenal performance, what he did against Geno Smith and that defense and turning them around. The numbers are incredible. Yeah, they didn't play anybody at the beginning of the year, but wow. You know, I mean, look at what they were able to do against a top-ranked team like West Virginia. That is impressive. And then Seth Doji, six touchdowns, 499 yards. I mean, he was phenomenal. Really was able to really pick apart that West Virginia team. And he said, you know, afterwards it was like 7-on-7. So did a great job, I think, for Texas Tech. Really one of the biggest upsets of the season in terms of upsetting West Virginia. Everybody thought maybe it was Kansas State that was going to do it. No, it was Texas Tech, and more chaos in the Big 12 thanks to Art Kaufman and Seth Dagey.
Yes, and we've still got plenty more. You know, whether it's Kansas State, whether it's Oklahoma, West Virginia still can score on anybody. Texas Tech, obviously, shown what they can do. Big 12, one of many, many storylines that we get to follow in these final 5 or 6 weeks of the regular season. Do you know where you're going to be this coming weekend?
I do not. I'm going to find out probably Monday. I'm thinking it might be Texas A&M at LSU, or LSU at Texas A&M, but we'll see. Kind of a light schedule this week with a couple teams and pulling some upsets, but should be another great week of college football. Spread out a lot more. I think that was the one thing when I looked at the schedule on Saturday. The games are a little bit spread out a little bit more. We don't have like nine and all in prime time that we're all focused on. You know, we got some early, we got some in the middle of the day, we got some late. It's going to be fun.
Nice. Should be a fun ride. Well, be sure to keep it here at CBSSports.com all week. We got the Dodcast, got a Heisman cast. We'll be talking to Chris Houston about Geno Smith, who he says still has the inside track on the Heisman Trophy race. Of course, weekend picks panel coming later in the week, and all of your regular CBSSports.com college football coverage at the Eye on College Football. For Brian Fisher, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of the Fish and Chips podcast.